Distinguished panel and guests from the Greek Embassy and the Cyprus High Commission, and friends and members of the Hellenic Bank Association, it is our pleasure to welcome you to our panel event that we're organizing together with the Hellenic Observatory of the London School of Economics, part of the European Institute. I wanted to start this welcome address by just sharing with you some data that perhaps will give rise to a few questions for our panelists. This is like a survey that has been conducted by a London Business School think tank called the Global Entrepreneurship Monitor. And I have put on slide two questions, the answers to two questions. As you can see, the first one shows the percentage of population between 18 and 64 years of age who they see good opportunities to start a firm in the area where they live. And as you can see, when they ask this question, Swedish people came up to 80% and Greece came up to 13.7%. So is the last two position, 13% of respondents show that they have or they see good opportunities. The graph next to it shows the percentage of the same respondents who actually say the fear of failure will prevent them from setting up a business. And again, Greece has the bottom two position with 56% of respondents saying that they fear to start a business because they fear of failure. Is that something cultural? Is it because of the economy? These are questions that we all like to know and address, and it's very important for rebooting the economy to look into the three pillars of entrepreneurship, innovation, as well as competitiveness. So we welcome our panel and Professor Kevin Thurstone, the chair of this event.
Thank you. Well, thank you, Lewis, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for coming to this discussion tonight. It could hardly be more timely in the context of the expectation that come August, Greece will complete its third bailout program, and even more timely, this very afternoon, the cabinet in Greece is discussing the government's post-bailout economic plan. So our essential question is to consider how can Greece best establish a sustainable growth model for the future? What needs to be done? And what the priorities might be, what the reforms might be, how can jobs be created? How can the Greek economy undergo a transformative change so that growth in the long term can be secure? Now, our panel this evening offers us a wealth of expertise and experience from different sectors. I'm going to invite them to make a brief 10-minute presentation, and on your behalf, I've indicated them to them very firmly that the maximum is 10 minutes, please. And then there should be plenty of time for discussion here on stage, questions from you in the audience. So hopefully we can explore a number of key themes. Our speakers probably need little introduction to those of you who are Greek in the audience, but let me explain who they are. And this will be the sequence in which they will make their opening presentations. Dr. Vasilis Apostolopoulos is the CEO of the Athens Medical Group, He's the president of the Hellenic Entrepreneurs Association. He's a member of the General Council of the Hellenic Federation of Industries, the Federation of Enterprises, SEV, in Greece, and a member of the Greek Medical Tourism Council, and a member of the board of Greece-Qatar Business Council. Nikos Drandakis is founder and CEO of BEAT. And yes, I'm cool enough to know what BEAT actually means in the Greek context. That is, as I'm sure you know, a leading mobile taxi application, which allows users to choose and hail their taxi driver electronically without a phone call. And given the nature of London taxi drivers, who would prefer to communicate with taxi drivers electronically rather than by physical speech? So Nikos Drandakis created the BEAT company. Taxi BEAT, as it then was acquired by MyTaxi, a subsidiary of the Daimler Corporation, and subsequently it was rebranded as BEAT, and is continuing its expansion, especially in South America. Michalis Tsamas is chairman and the CEO of the OTE Group, the largest telecommunications provider in Greece and Southeast Europe. Since November 2010, it is a subsidiary of Deutsche Telekom, and Mr. Tsamas is also the chairman of the board of Telecom Romania, and he's a member of the board of the Hellenic Federation of Enterprises, SEV, since 2016, and he heads the Committee for the Digital Economy for that organization. So, first of all, can you please welcome our panel? And can I now ask Dr. Vasilis Apostolopoulos to make the opening presentation?
Okay. Shall I stand up? Or
your choice.
Okay, I will remain.
Okay.
Thank you. So, Professor Featherstone, dear Kevin, thank you very much for this kind introduction. I would like to thank both the Hellenic Observatory and the Hellenic Bankers Association for the invitation and congratulate you on putting together this excellent event and timely discussion. So, interestingly enough, last time I was in a lecture theater at the LSE was two decades ago. I was actually sitting on the opposite side of the room. So, actually, it's only now that I realize the merits of being part of the audience. in a way, the topic of our discussion today invites for a short response. What should the state do? If we were about to study a normal case, then the reply could be easy. The state should do as little as possible, allowing the society and the economy to grow and prosper. However, unfortunately, this is not the case with Greece. As we all know, the Greek case, it was neither the banks nor the private sector debt that brought the country in the brink of total catastrophe. Instead, it was the enormous public debt accumulated by a problematic, oversized, and clientelistic state. Therefore, exceptionally in the Greek case, the cure of the economic illness rests mostly with the government and the behavior of the political parties and the entire political system. There is no path to growth that does not require decisive measures by the state, not only in terms of legislation, but also in terms of proper and full implementation. Above all, one thing is and needs to be crystal clear. Irrespective of how the exit of the program will be framed, whether it's a clean exit or tight supervision or enhanced surveillance type, there are some unavoidable preconditions that will have to be met. In sum, the priority is to avoid, at any cost, a return to the past. The end of the adjustment programs does not mean that we can relax. In fact, we need to uphold our fiscal prudence and discipline. To attain this, we need to steer away and clear from problematic and past practices, such as the clientistic state and the political exploitation of the state as its apparatus by the political parties. Additionally, we need to avoid any allocation of benefits and special provisions. Instead, we should be working on fine-tuning the best possible incentives for business so that they can develop, create jobs and invest. Furthermore, we need a political consensus on the very basic prerequisites needed for a sustainable and dynamic recovery, namely the lightening of the bureaucratic burden, the fueling of entrepreneurship, a simplification and streaming of the legal framework, a smart tax reform with incentives for new investment and the expansion of business, as well as clear and stable rules of the game that are applied universally. In my short intervention, I will look at what the state and the Greek private sector can do to help accelerate growth and ensure a smooth, inclusive and sustainable recovery. The first step is around the corner, the exit from the memoranda. On the one hand, it is clear that the end of the adjustment program is welcome. It is also clear, however, that we are quite far from the end of the reform and adjustment effort. In truth, we urgently need a new national reform plan of Greek ownership this time and embraced by the whole political system that will help us maximize competitiveness, productivity, innovation, and exports of value goods and services. All new reforms must be highly targeted, aiming to unlock trapped potential, encourage investments, facilitate the opening of new business, reducing the risk, pave the way for new jobs by reducing the social security and tax burden of firms, provide the space for a bottom-up restructuring of the Greek business map. Of course, as well, we need to attract and repatriate talent, some of which is present here today in this room. It is, I think, the epicenter of resynthesizing the country so that we invite and we attract the Greek talent back. So while top-down support, incentives and other facilitations are welcome, in the end of the day, the execution of the plan must be entrusted with a private enterprise, the animal spirits, entrepreneurial vision and managerial efficiency. We effectively know what we need to do to go forward. We have largely known actually this since the very start of this crisis. All we need is to focus on our comparative advantages, invest smartly, diversify, advanced greater interconnectedness between our different productive sectors, advanced smart domestic and international synergies, build economies of scale, maximize our competitiveness, as well as our exports of final goods with high added value. So agrotourism and education are two characteristic examples of this. Having said all that, it may shock some of you that in spite of the numerous challenges, contradictions and irregularities that the Greek case continues to present, I am fairly optimistic regarding the outlook of the Greek economy and the prospects of our country. The recent progress of several major investments, major both in size but of symbolic significance, is a positive indeed and encouraging signal globally. So from Ellinikon to Atalanti Hills, from Tesla and Samsung R&D centers in Greece to the far-reaching infrastructure investments currently underway. So with actually 69 investments in a total budget in excess of 21.4 billion, the Greek outlook in the map is shifting again. Furthermore, according to latest data, exports are on the rise again, marking an approximately 13% increase in the last quarter. While there seems to be increasing investment interest in real estate and tourism. So our economy is in continues to be in dire need of new dynamic entrepreneurial activity, new ideas, new firms, new synergies, new investment, new global partnerships. And, of course, we need in many ways to have a holistic approach, rebranding the country and smart repositioning of it in the global chessboard. So, in fact, how we are perceived politically, economically, socially, it's very important and very crucial for foreign investment, market confidence, tourism, negotiating power, as well as, crucially, our national security, if one looks also at the geopolitical side. So, dear friends, I think that there's clearly a way, and we clearly have the means. Let's find the will. So, Greece today seems to be trapped in a rhetoric reform continuum, whereby we keep promising reforms, we announce them, and we even legislate them with some pressure, and then the long, uncertain wait begins. And of course, we need to see which of these reforms will actually be implemented and how will it implemented, etc. So, going back to the rebranding issue, we need to work collectively and methodically and to make the transition, a clear transition, from the Greek crisis to the Hellenic growth, recovery and prosperity. Reconceptualized a powerful European state at this pivotal southeastern corner of the Mediterranean. So I warmly suggest to drop the name Greece and adopt the name Hellas. After all, it's the Hellenic Observatory, it's the Hellenic Bankers Association, it's the Hellenic alumni, it's the Hellenistic period. And the Philhellenes, because I know, Kevin, you are one of them. We have a good landmark ahead of us. It's the 2021, where we're going to celebrate the 200 years since the Greek War of Independence. So we need to work hard by then, with rapid growth, a degree, of course, of political consensus, and a sense of common purpose among the people, among us. So a lot of work is needed, but the challenge for a rapid, sustainable, and inclusive growth is only just beginning. And if we work together, we can make it happen. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed. Nico?
Yes, sir, thank you. Is it working?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Professor. Thank you for the kind invitation. It's an honor to be here because it's a place I never had the opportunity to be and study. I'm not certain I'm the right person to talk about the problems my country is facing and financial crisis and everything else. I'm not a politician. I don't have the bigger picture on what the real problems are from many different angles of the problem. But I may have a point of view on what it takes for my broader industry. You know, I belong in the technological innovation entrepreneurship industry, and what it takes to grow as an ecosystem, our industry, and contribute more to the Greek economy. And I have the feeling that the problem I am facing in growing my company is related in a big way and is very close to the problems that the Greek economy is facing in growing. Now, I know what many of you would think that what the biggest problems are for my company. No, it's not the Spiridis and it's not the Greek regulators who are chasing my company. My biggest problems have to do with, you know, our company relies mostly on developing big data systems and automations. We rely a lot to invest in the future and be competitive in building smart systems in the back end. And for this reason, you know, we need many, many engineers in advanced technologies. We need big data engineers. We need data scientists. We need experts on machine learning and artificial intelligence. Now, we're struggling to hire enough people with the company because our development hub is in Greece, our engineering hub. And the truth is that there isn't just enough, you know, talent pool in Greece to support this operation for us. And this is our biggest problem right now because we want to be competitive. We expand internationally. We have very big competitors. And we can't just, you know, support our product development from Greece. This happens because most of the Greeks who can work on advanced technologies have left the country. Some of you may be here, or you know, you may know already many who live here. And that is why brain drain, I think, is a big deal for the country right now. If we do not have the human capital to support and grow companies like mine, then Greece will never be part of the fourth industrial revolution, which is already happening. That's a big deal for me, for the country. And I think if it happens, the ship will keep sinking, but maybe for reasons different than the reasons it started sinking about 10 years ago. And this way, I think maybe we will turn our attention again in growing an economy on more traditional, tried and true, you know, sectors like agriculture or tourism or low-value services, but this way, I think, will make our economy a third-rate economy in the global competition. So what can we do ahead of this challenge? From my perspective, at least, I think we have a number one priority for us to do three things. Retain talent, whatever has stayed in the country. Get back the talent that fled the country in the last years. And third, why not cause brain drain in other countries and attract talent from other countries. That's what we have to do, at least from my perspective. And the way to do it is really hard because competition is harsh. I can offer just one example I have from my personal experience. And it was back in the summer of 2015. You know, one of these evenings when Yanis Varoufakis stormed his apartment saying to his wife, "Honey, I shut the banks." And whatever came after that. A few weeks later, the municipality of Amsterdam approached me, trying to convince me to get my company to Amsterdam, to relocate there. And they made my tickets to fly to Amsterdam for one day, and there was one person dedicated for me from early morning to pick me from the airport until late at night. Now, we're not a very special company for them. We are among hundreds or thousands of companies that have a certain amount of talent interesting for these people. But it shows the amount of dedication and importance they give to attract this talent. So this guy took me, you know, to lawyers, to accountants, to headhunters, to see what it is, what it means for us to operate out of Amsterdam. And he presented me many, many incentives and tax incentives to bring the company. And these incentives also were based on how many people I'll bring to Amsterdam, how many people from my engineering team. Now, notice that these guys are not asking for capital investment. They never asked me how much money I will bring to this country, to Amsterdam, to invest. All they asked for me was bring our people. And he actually told me that Amsterdam right now is in fierce competition with four cities across the world to attract top talent, which is New York, San Francisco, London, and Stockholm. And this shows that they put the right emphasis, the right focus on the real challenges and problems that the global economy is facing right now. It's all about attracting talent, and then I think, based on my personal view, I think probably that capital will follow talent. Capital is following talent right now. It's not following maybe, you know, tax incentives, financial incentives, mostly where the talent lives and where the talent can develop, you know, the technologies and the products of the future. So I think that most of us, all of us, even our leaders in the country, everyone knows what's the right thing to do. The big question is how deep in our belief system exists the question, where do we want this country to be in the new world, in the new century? And it all comes with a number of no's that you have to say as a leader to small groups that have vested interests in not allowing the country to change and move forward. So I think that's a big question. It's all about the leadership of the country, like it is all about the leadership of our companies or the leadership of our families, right? It's the same thing. So that's how I see the problems we discussed today. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you very much. That's a great example. Thank you. So now to McGavin.
Good evening, everyone. Before I go on, allow me to ask two questions. The answers will help me to see how much I should elaborate or not on what I will present to you. How many of you are non-Greeks? If you could raise your hand. Okay. How many of you are students? Thank you. So, good evening again. And I will start by expressing to you, by sharing with you my belief regarding crisis. There are two ways to face crisis. Lose heart, panic, become introverted, and hope for the best. Or keep calm, treat crisis as an opportunity, come up with a comprehensive and decisive strategic plan, and get to business. I would like to contribute to today's discussion by presenting to you the OTEC Group's example and how we dealt with crisis, how we transformed during the Greek financial crisis, our company to a modern technology powerhouse. I became chairman and CEO of the group in 2010. It was the year that the first MOU between the Greek government and its creditors was signed. At that time, OTE was trapped into a vicious cycle. Low competitiveness, eroding financial results, poor customer experience, fierce competition, and an inherited debt, which, due to the Greek crisis, was at high risk. Indicatively, I can give you some numbers. The debt was at 4.3 billion euros, which was approximately 2.4 times the EBITDA, which for normal financial periods, this is an average and an efficient structure. However, for the crisis and when the banks have closed the refinancing, this is an issue. Our personnel costs were over 1 billion, twice as much the efficient European average of an incumbent. Our service revenues were decreasing with a rate of minus 10% on an annual basis, and we're losing customers at a rate of 10% of our total customer base. Above all, we had also a hostile regulation which very wrongly, instead of promoting investments to the country, it was stopping OTEC Group from investing in order to protect the competitors who were not willing or were not capable to invest. So what did we do? What did we do in order to transform the company? As I said earlier, we treated the situation as an opportunity. We came up with a very solid strategy, and we got to business. At that time, my team and myself, we saw the various aspects of the environment, the internal factors and the external factors that were influencing our business. And instead of finding excuses for doing nothing because of the external environment, we decided, and we're determined for this, that we have to at least handle and manage the internal factors which we could influence. At this point, I would like to stress the fact that no matter how good your plans are, they cannot be materialized or be successful if you don't have the right people. So having the right team of people is of the utmost importance for the success of any plan. We formed a strategy. Our strategy consisted of 6 pillars: technology superiority, best customer experience, new revenue streams, leadership in core business, operational cost optimization, and a modern human resources strategy. We changed more or less everything, and we did this in 3 stages. First of all, we fixed the basics. We had to fix the basics in order to secure the competitiveness of the company. We slashed our net debt with bold decisions like liquidation of assets, introduced a new customer-centric philosophy, and changed all our customer-facing processes and systems. We improved our prices by cutting costs and inspired our people and tackled cultural change towards a performance-based organization. Having done that, having fixed the basics, we moved to the second stage, which was a focus on growth. We invested heavily throughout the crisis on both fixed and mobile. We invested on an internal infrastructure, on IoT systems, and the total investments exceeded 2 billion euros during the crisis period. At the same time, we cut costs wherever we could in order to be able to continue investing. We built our brand and retail channels and created new products as well as entered new market segments like the ICT segment and the TV segment. I could go on for hours telling you of the various things we did, but I think for today's discussion are covered enough. So having done all this, we achieved to transform the company from a fast-bleeding telco with 0 net adds in 2010 to a leader in broadband, ICT, and TV sector in 2018, today. So what have we achieved with all this? Today, OTEA has secured its sustainability. The 2017 results, which were announced a few months ago, showed revenues of 4 billion, net debt down from 4.3 billion to 700 million euros, a resilient EBITDA with an EBITDA margin of 34%. In fact, our margin in Greece is at 40%. We reduced costs by more than 30% while delivering better services. This allowed us to invest in NGN networks and infrastructure, as I said earlier, of more than 2 billion during the last 6 years, and we have committed plans to invest more than 2 billion in the next 4 years with the announced program of fiber to the home for 1 million homes, which is equivalent to 25% of the total households of Greece. So in other words, today we lead the market. We lead in every segment. We have decided to compete: fixed, mobile, ICT, and pay TV. Most importantly, we have become the love brand, with customers choosing services for the quality we offer and for the experience that they have, and not because of necessity. However, as I said earlier, we have covered so far the two stages. There is a third stage, which is a very important one, which will take us to the future. And this is a new challenge. So the third stage will deal with digitalization, with digital transformation. So it's a new journey. It's a new journey that we must take, and we have to change for this gear again. No industry or organization could service without adapting to the new digital era. We have already compiled a very solid plan. It's a 360 digital transformation program which focuses on preparing our business for the digital economy, embracing new technologies and services, embarking in a digital transformation that will affect customers, employees, and partners. Thankfully, continuous rapid adaptability and leading change has become a mindset for us. But with this, allow me to make a few remarks or comments about Greece, since Greece is the country which most of our revenues are generated. Greece has gone a very tough journey, has gone through very tough times during the past almost 10 years. However, we see a positive future, although fragile, but we see some positive economic indicators to come ahead of us. A lot has been achieved so far with the support of our European allies. Still, the situation remains challenging. The most important thing for Greece now is a vision for itself, translated to concrete, down-to-earth strategy, set the target, determine the objectives, and follow with consecutive actions. Greece, like OTEA did, has to leave behind mindsets and proceed with reforms to make the country truly business-friendly. Technology can be an ally in this effort, a lever for faster growth. We believe in digital Greece, and that's why we have to urge Greece and its officials to exploit the fourth industrial revolution. It's crucial for the country, for its people, and for its businesses. For me, it's clear that this is the only way forward. OTEA Group can be a partner, a supporter to this direction. And since you have proven that we have managed to transform our company to a technology powerhouse, we can help the country to do the same. And we are there in order to contribute towards this direction. Thank you.
Well, let me thank each of our panelists for those opening contributions. I'd like to start by asking some questions to each of you collectively, and then I'm going to invite you to ask follow-up questions of your own. Perhaps I could start with a cultural question. When Mr. Luizu gave the data at the very beginning of our session about attitudes towards entrepreneurship, clearly in Greece the survey was showing alarmingly low scores. But if you were to look at the comparator countries, Portugal, for example, then attitudes towards entrepreneurship during the crisis years, as a colleague of mine has recently been reporting, attitudes towards entrepreneurship in Portugal during the bailout years went significantly up. In Greece, they went significantly down. This seems to be perverse. It's a crisis, good to take opportunities from a crisis, as was mentioned before. But it's also perverse in the sense that the Troika, the EU institutions, have precisely been trying to encourage entrepreneurship, competitiveness, and all of those things. So when we look at Mr. Luizu's survey data, we see something of a strange contrast between Greece and Portugal. Now, I don't want us to become so focused on the comparison between Greece and other countries. But I noticed that, Michali, in your presentation, one of the things you said about the transformation of OTE was that you brought about culture change within the organization. And Nikos and Vasilis also mentioned about the importance of changing attitudes. Indeed, each of you, in various degrees, mentioned it's a question of will, a question of will. So I wonder how you would suggest to a prime minister in Greece how, on a medium term, perhaps a long term basis, governments could change attitudes towards entrepreneurship to make public, to make young people, to make the most talented young people in Greece view entrepreneurship more positively. Michali, do you want to begin with that?
First of all, I would like to say the following. You know, governments, especially European governments, are very pro-social. They are very much pro-social, and that's why they, you know, they impose taxation in order to redistribute the income of the rich to the poorest or to the ones who cannot don't have enough anyway, in order to make sure that the social care systems are there in order to support the weakest. And likewise, we have similar programs in our companies. We have the social responsibility programs. In order for a company, in other words, to be able to have large budgets on social responsibility programs, the company, there is one prerequisite. The company has to be healthy. So first of all, and above all, governments, the Greek government particularly, has to understand that in order for the government to be able to finance the social care programs that it needs to finance for the weak, it has to be a healthy economy. In order to have a healthy economy, you have to have investments. It's all part of the equation.
Perhaps I should put it differently. The kind of survey that Mr. Luizu was pointing to in terms of attitudes towards entrepreneurship show on a long-term basis, pre-crisis and during the crisis,
attitudes towards entrepreneurship in Greece being substantially lower than the European average in good times and in bad times. So I recognize your point about governments should prioritize business-friendly reforms before they can talk about social compensation. But how does Greece change the minds, the attitudes of young people who disproportionately in Greece feel that entrepreneurship is not for them?
This is a personal lesson. I will try to, you know, we Greeks have a problem. A problem, or in some cases positive, in some cases is negative. We rely very much on hope. Okay, which is, it's very good to rely on hope, but you cannot just rely on hope by doing nothing. It's fine to rely on hope, but you have to take actions also. So, if, let's say, someone comes, a politician, and usually the politicians, most of the politicians, you know, understand economics in their own way, and they play music to your ears according to the hopes that you have, and you believe this music, then you go into a trap. And I think this is the trap that the Greeks fell from 2010 and on. Okay. Because I believe that if we had taken the initial measures that were requested by the creditors during the first 2 or 3 years, the whole thing would have been over by now.
Okay. Vasily?
Well, actually, Kevin, I will not challenge the findings of the survey, but according to my feeling and experience, is that the notion of entrepreneurship is on the rise within the Greek society in the crisis era. All the other institutions like the parliament, the government, the political parties were in the fall, and entrepreneurship, actually, there was last year a survey published in Kathimerini, a paper exactly indicating this. Obviously, entrepreneurship is not for everyone. And entrepreneurship is not an alternative of being appointed somewhere in the, within the public sector. So, and it's not to, to open a coffee shop that will be closed in maybe 3 months, and the debt will be red, and the vendors will also will have money to claim, etc., etc. The basic problem in Greece was that entrepreneurship, the word actually entrepreneurship, had in a lot of instances a negative connotation, because whoever was a successful entrepreneur was conceived to be either a crook or used, let's say, unlawful tactics, or made some special arrangements with the various governments, etc., etc. So, and this is also our effort within the Hellenic Entrepreneurs Association to educate people and explain what exactly is entrepreneurship and what is the role of entrepreneurship in the country's revival. Because I firmly believe that it's only the private sector at this moment that can drive the country out of this crisis. So, in a nutshell, I think that people during this crisis have really understood and appreciate the role of entrepreneurship, and I think that this change, of course, it's taking time to change. And those, first of all, that should change mind are our politicians. So they need to understand, and then also give the vision to the people. What's the prospect of Greece? What is the way to go forward? But this vision also needs leadership. And the problem, I think, and I will conclude with this, in our country is the lack of leadership and vision that the state side does not have, but at the same time, the private sector has.
Thank you. Nico?
Well, I'm not sure I have too much to add, and I'm not certain I have analyzed properly the Greek demographics and the way people feel about entrepreneurship. I think one part of the problem is that, you know, this leftist mythology that entrepreneurs and people in business in general are there to just drink the blood of poor people. It played a role over these decades, maybe after the government that we have now, maybe this mythology comes to an end. Who knows? And then public sector plays a huge role, enormous role in people's, you know, attitude against, you know, labor, how they see themselves in working. So usually people go with the easy solution. If there's a public sector with this clientele system that promises you an easy job without meritocracy, but just having someone to connect you with a public job, that's a good way to go to fix your life's problems, and that maybe is a reason also to have people hostile against the entrepreneurs or this way of living.
Okay, thanks. Perhaps my second and last question. From the reports we read about the government's economic strategy for after August, according to the newspapers, there's reports about re-establishing the principles of collective bargaining. There's also references to restoring social justice. With those things in mind, are you confident that this is a plan which is business-friendly, Mikhali?
That's a good question. Re-establishing the collective agreements or the collective bargaining. This depends how they will do it. And, okay, it's to what extent they will leave freedom and they will pass the power to the unions. If it's balanced towards one side, then it will run again into troubles. So we'll have to see what they will do.
Okay. Vasily?
Well, I will simply comment that as things are today, we in my company, the Athens Medical Group, we employ 3,000 people. So it's only 50 people out of the 3,000 that are just with a basic salary. But at the same time, if such a process, you know, is restored, then it would be a problem.
Nicole, are you confident about a business-friendly program coming from this government?
Not at all. It's obvious. No, I don't think this is the big questions we have to face as a society. It's you know, big questions are in a totally different place. No, it's nothing to do with what we need to do.
Okay. So we can now open it up to the audience. There are colleagues with the red T-shirts with microphones who can come to you. Could you simply say who you are and then briefly ask your question? Could we take the gentleman halfway up here, please?
Thank you. Manolis Galinianos. I'm a professor of economics at the Royal Holloway University. I have a question for Mr. Drandakis. His observation that it's very difficult to find qualified workers is a surprising one, given the high level of unemployment in Greece, especially among young people. So I wanted to ask him, what does he think are the primary reasons for that? So is it something that potentially his company could fix, like offering a higher salary, or is it that the prospects that workers find in working in Greece, as opposed to, say, coming here to the UK, that overall employment prospects are worse? So this is something that doesn't have to do with his own company, but it has to do with the fact that there aren't many other companies to which a worker could possibly move on later on or something like that. And I think this has to do with the what you mentioned also about whether it is possible to develop talent within Greece. Thank you.
Thank you. Nico?
So I think we could solve this problem with the lack of labor. Well, obviously we can offer higher salaries, and we do already, although it's hard to compete with companies like Facebook London or Google Geneva, or because these are the companies that are, you know, competing for our talent. But given that, even if we manage to compete on salaries, again, you have a trust issue. So we're talking with people, trying to attract them to work with us, and all they say, you know, across the whole interviews we would do is, what's going on with the situation with your regulatory battle? Is your company closing? Is the government going to shut down your company? And this hostility against, you know, companies like ours, is something that is really hard to overcome and attract talent. So it's much bigger, you know, the environment, the feeling, the way people perceive how we operate here. It's not just a money issue, it's much bigger. Unless we solve it, there's no way you can just put money to the problem.
Other questions, please? Could we take the lady at the front?
Dr. Evelyn Stefanaki, I'm a dermatologist living and working in London, and currently we have a great number of very accomplished doctors living and working abroad and offering their services not to the people of their own country. So the question is mainly to Dr. Apostolopoulos. As a CEO of Athens Medical Group, tell us a little bit about medical tourism and how that could potentially help the Greek economy. The second question has to do with a very recent legalization of the use of cannabis for medical use in Greece, and how could that affect the pharmaceutical industry and, as an extension, the Greek economy?
Okay, thank you for your question. I couldn't comment on cannabis. I'm a doctor, not a medical doctor. So, now coming back to your first question. Well, yes, but it has to be scientifically proven, and then there is a big debate that I cannot follow. So, indeed, medical tourism, and that was identified early enough back in 2012. There was a survey by McKinsey ordered by the Greek government, and it presented medical tourism as one of the key pillars that could potentially give growth to the Greek economy. Unfortunately, not much has been done at the legislative level since then. And we try, but we do it mostly on our own efforts and devices to promote our country, develop the brand name, because Greece, yes, is very well known for its touristic product, but it's not known as a medical tourism destination. So it's a tough exercise. As a group, I believe we are quite successful, and we hope that the proportion of our turnover coming from foreign patients will grow year on year. But I will give you just an example, a handicap that we are facing. We have a VAT rate of 24%, where our competitive markets is single digit or even zero. So you understand that we have a lot of obstacles to get over, but in the end of the day, I think that we have a very competitive price to quality ratio that we can use and become in a few years' time, because this is it takes a lot to build. It will eventually become an important part, and of course it is to our interest through this effort in medical tourism also to attract back talent like yourself. So we hope in the future to be able to give you the grounds, and this is what we have been doing all these years, not only to stop the brain drain, but reverse it and make it a brain gain.
Thank you. Other questions, please? Could we take the lady almost at the back?
Thank you very much. I have two specific questions. One would have to do...
Just tell everyone who you are.
Oh, sorry. My name is Irene Martin. I teach political science in the Autonomous University of Madrid, but currently I'm visiting fellow at the Hellenic Observatory. My question has to do to what extent do you think that some of the causes for this lack of attraction to investors have to do with the message that comes from outside Greece, the fact that it is not clear what is going to happen with the debt relief, for example, or in the past, the message hasn't been clear about whether Greece was following the correct path or not. So I suppose many investors who don't know what is happening in Greece from first-hand experience will take this into account. And how do you think this is going to look like from August on? And the second question has to do with collective bargaining. I wonder if when you, all of you were very skeptical about it, if what you meant was collective bargaining itself or the way it is done in Greece and whether it has more to do with collective actors in a way than with the institution of collective bargaining, because collective bargaining exists in many countries that attract investors. So I suppose it's not the institution itself, and maybe it has to do with the fact that there is no culture of maybe negotiating and giving up some things, but it's more a zero-sum game. I don't know what you think about it. Thank you.
Michali, do you want to start with that?
As I said, no, collective bargaining, the institution, let's say, or the practice is not a wrong one, is a right one. And when the rules of the game are equally balanced for both sides, then it's fine. The problem we had in Greece with the unions in the past was that the unions were not mature enough to accept that they had to compromise. So they were trying to maximize the benefits they had. Part of the problems that we faced in the last 10 years are problems that had been created in the 30 previous years because of the collective bargaining, extortion or blackmailing that was taking place over the years. So, yes, I'm in favor of having a collective bargaining institution in Greece, but at the same time, we have to make sure, the officials have to make sure, the government has to make sure that this is equally balanced and it gives power, the power is equally balanced. You cannot have the power shifted on one side, because then we'll run into problems.
Thanks. What about the other part of the question, that FDI in Greece may be lower because Europe is giving a very negative image about the or negative message about the future debt relief, etc.
Allow me to share to you my experience that I have, running a company which is also part of an international organization, but also by talking to foreign investors. There are a few factors which are very important for foreign investment or foreign investors, and these are mostly the taxation, the regulatory, and the legal environment. If you know that you have stability in this environment, so you don't have any surprises from year to year or for every 6 months, then you're prone to invest or you consider investing in one country. If you're not sure what comes in terms of regulation or laws or taxation, then you make your decision, you decide to go to invest in another country where the things are more much easier to forecast or to predict. So predictability or stabilization of the environment is a very important factor.
Thank you.
Okay. For investments.
Other questions? Suddenly, as we come towards the end, there's a crescendo of arms going up. Okay, could you show your arms again? Put up your hands again? Okay, could we take the gentleman right at the very back in the red shirt? Oh, I'm sorry. We will come back to you. Perhaps we can take a group of questions now.
Hi, my name is Mike. I work in the tech industry, and I would like to ask Mr. Dendrakis, what I find really remarkable for your company is how competitive you stay in a global market, how you found the markets, you focus, and you stay fairly competitive in those markets. So I'm wondering if that's something down to the individual entrepreneur, or if it's something that, policy can influence, so more companies find their markets internationally and stay competitive there? Because that feels, you know, a big theme behind making competitive companies abroad. Is that something, you know, down to a personal entrepreneur level, or is that something that policy can influence according to you?
Okay, good. We will take the gentleman now at the front, please.
Thank you. Dimitri Mournoudis from another organization with the Hellenic, in front of it, Hellenic Engineers Society of Great Britain. Excellent panel tonight. Two questions. The first one is on education. We keep talking about the lack of entrepreneurship and the statistics that Mr. Lois has put forward that the young Greeks are scared of starting up a business. Don't you think it has to do a lot with education, starting from primary school? Only specialist students will do economics. There's no discussion about personal finance. That's why we're hearing a lot in the news about people not understanding what they're signing up to as far as loans, personal loans, etc. And the second question is, Greece is fantastic at talking about the past, be it 25 centuries ago or 200 years ago. At the moment, there's no discussion about where Greece is going to end up in the next 15 to 20 years. Taking into account that new technology is going to make many jobs obsolete, presumably even taxi drivers, in the next 15, 20 years, where do you think specifically are the topics, the industries that Greece should be focusing on, which will produce high-paid jobs? Because tourism in general will not, and agriculture definitely not.
Okay, good. Thanks. You. We had some people in the middle. Could we take the gentleman in the white T-shirt, please?
Henry Chamberlain, a student from Eltham College. You're talking about like the loss of talent in Greece, and then there's also the issues of corruption and poor regulation. So what is it specifically that the Greek economy can offer, like foreign investment, to make sure it gets this growth, and what like areas can Greece really specialise in to ensure that they get this economic growth that they need?
Okay, and perhaps just one last question. The gentleman in the dark T-shirt.
Thank you. Sorry, made a note. So essentially, first of all, Vasilis Lambridis is one of the data engineers Nick was talking about. But my question is probably more directed to Dr. Vasilis. And if I remember correctly, you're a member of SEV?
Yes.
Yeah. So essentially, I hear a possible situation where the public sector needs, which is the most dysfunctional part of a system, needs to lead the change. And my question would be, what are the initiatives of the private sector, and especially institutions like SEV or EDE and similar structures, to essentially restructure themselves and rebrand towards the public and reach out and strengthen the voice directed from the private sector in order to leverage positive change towards the public sector and lead a more positive interaction between the private and the public? And I guess it's worth mentioning the precedence of like benefactors. There is a strong culture of big families benefactor in Greece.
I couldn't hear all of that, but essentially the question is, what can the private sector do leverage reform of the public sector and the institution?
How can leaders in the private sector lead change?
Okay. Nico, do you want to start with the first question, which was essentially whether success in the IT sector is essentially a question of leadership qualities or of the right policy framework? I guess it's a question, Nico, as to how modest you wish to be.
Yeah. Well, obviously, it's all about the entrepreneur succeeding and doing, delivering a result, regardless of policy. And you know, the hard truth is that if you're an entrepreneur, wherever you live, you have a mission just to succeed, you know, deliver. The companies expand or whatever your goals are to, because you take into account where you live and where you operate in. So you count everything, and then you have to, you know, work under certain circumstances and deliver. Otherwise, you give up and you just join a company. But policy obviously helps a lot, obviously. And that's why you see consistently successful companies in some parts of the planet and consistently failed companies or failed nations sometimes in other parts of the planet. So, yeah, policy plays an enormous role for the big picture. But individually, obviously, the entrepreneur plays a role too. It's up to him, you know, whether he succeeds or not, given the environment he operates in.
Good, thanks. Vasily, do you want to respond to the question about education? And the particular question was about the need perhaps to change the curriculum in schools so that people study economics and finance, etc., and perhaps beyond the school level to the kind of courses that students take at university. Are you optimistic on that front?
Well, I think that education, or to put it in another way, lack of education, is the number one problem in our country. And I'm not talking strictly about the curriculum and the syllabus, but I'm talking on the mentality. Even the obvious, let's say, link between the Greek universities and Greek corporates that should be there. There are political parties which still challenge this. So education, I think, it's in the epicenter of the change that we want to see in our country. And actually, a big obstacle today is the Greek constitution. It's the so-called Article 16 that forbids the creation of private universities. So I believe that once this is removed and competition is entered into the market, this will be beneficial for the Greek education as a whole. The new competition will also attract Greek brains, professors from foreign universities that will come to the country and will change the mentality. Of course, I just replied on the university level. The same applies to lower education, even from the kindergarten that my son attends. Children need to know that they should have an ambition, they should have a vision, and to explore their talents in the best way and not in the easy way.
Thank you. I can't miss the opportunity to mention that I recall when Anna Dimandopoulou was Minister of Education and talking about university reform, she went around Greece and she reported back that outside some of the universities, protesters were holding signs, no to aristia, no to excellence. Perhaps it's say something about the attitudes. Michali, do you want to pick up on any of those questions? There's a question.
I'd like to add some positive remarks. Let's not be.
Excellent.
Yeah. I think we owe it to the Greek people and to what they have gone through up to now in the last 8 years of the crisis. We're discussing here what should be done in order to attract more foreign investment. At the same time, we have to admit that a lot has been done. A lot of sacrifices have been taken, let's say, by the Greek people. In fact, I would say that the crisis we have had to go through Greece was the worst, even the crisis in 1929. And I would say that the reforms that have taken place in the last 8 years in Greece have been very harsh for the Greek citizens. And definitely it was not their fault that the country has come to this level. So I would say that these reforms that have been taken, in place, are at the right direction. They have helped a lot to start gradually coming out of the crisis. We have to make sure, and the government has to make sure, that these reforms are not reversed, like the collective agreement we're discussing for next year. But I would like to say that
It's because of these reforms that we have managed in our company to transform and previous state-owned company with all the diseases that the state-owned companies had into a very resilient and efficient company, which is supposed to be. It's not something I say that. This is accepted by the international financial community. It's one of the most, or the healthiest, and the most solid telecom companies in Europe. So it's, and to answer to the question of the young person over there regarding, you know, where someone can invest in Greece, where is the foreign investment could go to, there are many areas in Greece that are still, you know, offer opportunities, like the marinas area, the medical tourism area, the agricultural area. For me, this could become an organic agricultural country, you know, in its totality, because we have the weather and we have also it's a matter of having a vision and then, you know, translating this vision into a mission and objectives and goals and whatever. So it's there are many things that have been done. Even corruption, that someone mentioned, has been tackled in many aspects. One thing we have to all make sure is that we don't become complacent.
Thanks. If I may, Mikhail, you mentioned there that the transformation of OTE had been helped by the kind of policies which have been undertaken during the crisis. And I guess there's reference to the kind of policies that Europe, the Troika, insisted upon. So logically, do we understand you to say that after August, after the end of the third bailout, you would be more confident of a program which was business-friendly if Europe did indeed have, whatever the phrase is, enhanced surveillance of the Greek case? That would reassure you, rather than leaving matters to the political choice of governments?
Okay, allow me not to make any statement on this.
Okay.
This is public, so I don't want to become political. So,
okay, we can interpret the silence however you wish. We are now out of time. Can I first of all thank our colleagues in the Hellenic Bankers Association for their continued support. Can I also give a quick plug for the Hellenic Observatory and our public events program? After the summer, of course, we will be having another program of public events in the next academic year with, I think, some very interesting public speakers coming from Greece. So please do look at the website for the LSE Hellenic Observatory to learn about those as they are announced during the summer. But finally, can you please join me in thanking our three panelists for this evening?